Session number 8286, reel 3.
Colonel Leach, reel 3. In your description of the fighting at Caleta, you mentioned that the Italian artillery was well directed and that its fire was having effect. In general, was the Italian artillery well directed and well managed?
It was well managed and well directed. The only thing, as I've said before, could be said against them was that their shells didn't often explode, or sometimes didn't explode. We got one in our mess truck. We just lodged there. It had blown all our food and drink to bits. Then the question was, whose job was it to remove the shell? And my colleagues decided it was the battery commander's.
How did you go about doing it?
I kept hull down, picked the shell out and threw it away. And it was still dead, thank God.
Did the Italians ever attempt to engage in counter-battery fire?
Yes. On occasions, generally, they would drag their guns up onto a crest and engage in counter-battery fire visually from their gun positions. This had its drawbacks and was dangerous, but we had hardly any casualties therefrom, and constant and immediate reprisal would shift them.
Did they ever actually knock out any of your guns, or?
No. No guns nor no gunners were ever wounded on a gun position.
Going on again to the Omo River crossing, you mentioned that you were well up with the infantry as they were doing their crossing and outflanking of the Italian positions. How were your forward officers able to keep in touch on that sort of rapid forward movement?
They had radio sets. The FOO had radio set with him. And on that occasion, he was within sight of myself and the main OP.
And what was your range of vision in Ethiopia generally? I know it was fairly short in Kenya because of the vegetation. But in Ethiopia, presumably...
2,000 yards or more.
Did you do a lot of firing over open sights?
Not to my knowledge.
You mentioned John Millard and his band of irregulars. Who were these irregulars and what were they like?
They were locally conscripted forces serving under British officers. There were several British officers who had bands of locals. There was Major Ringrose MP. Until recently, I think Ringrose was still a member of Parliament. I met him about 5 years ago. Tom Hemphrey of Hemphrey Scouts, an ex-Indian Army cavalry officer. John Millard. There was a brother of a friend of mine, Ronnie Pilkington's brother Mark, of the Household Cavalry, who had another band of irregulars, and we met at Gonder. They were all strange, independent commanders of the SAS type of officer. They were brave. They were inured to hardship, and they did a tremendous job. John Millard left the battery when we got to Addis Ababa in April 1941. He had his own band, but he used to base himself on our battery positions or battery mess, as did Tom Hemphrey. they would come in with information and they would take us through the Italian lines or round the Italian lines in order that we could spot the targets and shoot better than we would have done otherwise. They were invaluable. Tom Hemphrey is dead. He was the resident magistrate in Nakuru. He died, he was fairly elderly. He died 6 years ago. His son is a policeman now in the Metropolitan Police. His wife works for public school somewhere near Guildford. John Millard runs a safari business in Kenya. He's 73 next birthday. Very young. Peter Pan has given up flying his own aeroplane. And he comes home every year, and he and I, two survivors of the battery, we go fishing together many times in strange places, but always together. And it's been a friendship which has lasted from the days of Afmadu to today.
How many people did he have in his band of irregulars?
I would think he probably had about 800 to 1,000.
And how were they armed?
They were armed with rifles and light automatics.
Were they local Ethiopian?
They were local Ethiopians, a terrible cutthroat band of brothers. All right under command, but my goodness, let loose. I wouldn't go near them.
When you went behind the enemy lines, was this done at night, or did you travel at all in the daytime?
We did both, but normally it was done during the night, before dawn, to get into position where one could see. They'd been there before. They wanted to put the OP down so that one could shoot at first light.
When you were in Gondar, you mentioned that you'd come back from leave to take part in that battle, and you found that the battery was in some peril because the Italians were able to search the valley where they were emplaced, and that the gun positions had to be moved every night to avoid being attacked. How was the Italian position broken in the end?
The Battle of Gondar was an interesting one, because Gondar was a very tough nut to crack. It was surrounded by hills facing outwards towards our offensive, heavily defended with machine gun positions, artillery, and also extremely cunningly booby-trapped. It was difficult to get a proper view of the enemy defences, but again and finally the will to resist had gone from the Italian forces. They'd fought a rearguard action all the way up from Moyale to Gondar. There was little hope for themselves, and I think they had every justification to surrender. A total resistance at that time would have been useless. It might have caused 1,000 casualties to the attacking forces, but that was a very small number. And I think that they took the right decision to put up a token defence, and in some cases it was more than a token defence. They defended bravely and then cry finish and surrender.
These booby traps, had you encountered such devices before Gondar?
I believe they had been encountered, But this was the first time that I had a personal knowledge of them. And there was no doubt that the ridge on which the KR battalion, which we were supporting, was heavily booby-trapped with tripwires and landmines and grenades. And this caused casualties. And, of course, the greatest casualty of the lot was my friend Hartigan, who moved two steps out of the cleared lane and stood on a landmine, lost his leg, and then eventually his life. And Tom Henfrey and I slept on a booby trap that night. There was a pile of straw with a landmine under it and a tripwire leading to a tree, and luckily nobody passed over the tripwire. Otherwise I wouldn't be here today to tell you this story.
On the whole, by this stage of the campaign, what did you think about the Italians or feel about the Italians as an enemy?
I felt sorry for them. I felt that they had been misled. They had done a very good job of colonization in Abyssinia. As I say, their roadworks, their waterworks, their agriculture, their protected farms were remarkably good. They were bombastic. All they wanted to do was to be left alone, to get on with their work. Possibly they were low-class peasants from southern Italy, but they were doing a good job. They weren't particularly good fighters. Their air force probably was better than the army. But I believe at Karen is a suburb of Nairobi. At Karen, they fought extremely well, early days of the war. They were really good. They put up a really good defensive battle. And Karen was a hard nut to crack. But I can't say anything that they were difficult to crack in any of the battles that we fought. And our casualty list, as far as 22nd Mountain Battery concerned, bears this out. One signal, one officer. And that was all.
Are there any general observations or concluding remarks you'd like to make about the lessons of the campaign and its general character?
I think, in the first place, I would like to pay a tribute to the officers and men of the battery. This is probably understandable, having commanded it, but they were first class. They were professional soldiers, and they did their job extremely well. They were aggressive in their OP work, in their reconnaissance. They were loyal. We had no differences whatsoever. And we enjoyed ourselves. We enjoyed our own company. The Indian soldier was remarkably stalwart, both in adversity, in a strange country, and a strange environment. Looking back on it, I marvel at his ability to go to war for the British Raj in anywhere the British Raj cared to send him. The shikar, the shooting, the game shooting, I'm not talking about 3.7-inch howitzers, was out of this world. I don't think any four officers had the privilege to have such an enjoyable time, albeit during a war. And finally, the beauty of the Abyssinian mountain scenery around Gondar, quite fantastic. I wish one could go back there, but it's a scene of upheaval between the Eritreans and the Abyssinians at the moment. I can hold no praise for the Italian, for the Abyssinian local population and custom of disemboweling and castrating their male victims. It was quite horrible, and as a young man, the first person, Italian soldier, I saw castrated, stripped of his clothes and castrated, the picture remains with me today. But as I've said in my notes, no woman that I saw was molested in any way at all, nor child. I can't say anything more. It's, there were two years of great pleasure, great friendship. And all of us who were there, who survived, look back on it with pleasure.